we'll get underway. Really, really excited about today's session. These case study webinars we do are the favourite webinars, where we get to talk to one of the members who's doing some cool stuff. And today we're going to catch up with Kerry from EAS. Here we go. And really looking forward to that. So we'll jump on with Kerry in a few minutes and just talk through some of the things that he's been up to. Kerry's a member of our Boardroom program, and he's got a pretty interesting story, a slightly different approach to how he does things, which I think will be really interesting for us all today. So, hey, what we've been looking at recently, look, last month we looked at how to set your goals up. So you should really have your vision book and your goals all sorted out now. And that's what we're going to be working on, obviously, for the next part of the year. And I just thought I'd put up the million-dollar tradie ladder there. So today we're going to talk about how to really go from the stability area. And Kerry's going to talk about how he's gone through the stability area, up through the success area. Now he's looking to head up into the scale area. So that's going to be pretty exciting. So without further ado, we'll jump on board and catch up with Kerry. So I'll just dial him up here. All right, g'day mate, how you doing?
Good mate, good.
Good, good. Here we go, we'll just send the webcam there so everyone can see your smiling face. The ginger ninja. Alrighty, how are you, bud?
Good mate, good.
Awesome. So you've just got back from Australia, have you?
Yeah, just been over in Tasmania down Wynyard, looking at a Fonterra plant over there.
Awesome. Okay. Good trip.
Yeah, it was mint. It was a little bit, it was nice and hot. It was good. Weather was mint.
Yep. And you survived the snakes and stuff?
Yeah, mate. There was a few checking of the motel room before I went to bed every night, but that's all good. Saw some guys jumping off the pier into the water, which I thought was crazy, but it's all good.
The lads from Aussie will be like toughen up.
Yeah.
So, hey, awesome to have you here today, buddy. And you're one of the good blokes. So appreciate you taking some time out to share with the rest of the group. So what we'll do is we've got a few questions, I guess, to go through. And, we'll just hear, you know, what your experience has been, some of the things you've learnt, and we'll just jump in if that's cool.
Cool. Yeah, I just got a couple of notes there, so I'll just probably refer to some of my notes.
Yeah, no worries, man. Mate, good stuff. And I might take some notes as we go through as well, so that with the recording, we've got that all as well. So just stand by. So I guess, mate, to kick off, maybe just introduce yourself and tell everyone, you know, who you are, a bit about your business, type of work you do and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, cool. So, yeah, I'm Kerry. I started EAS, which is a Waikato-based business. We've been going for about 4.5 years now, which is all good. So we're mainly focused on the industrial market, mainly dairy factories, sort of large companies. We do all sorts of installs from transmitters, pressure transmitters, level detection, all sorts of sensors, pumps, valves, soft starters on pumps, you know, so all that sort of instrumentation type of gear. So it's all good. So I was working in the dairy factory before I went out on my own.
Yep. So you were employed by Fonterra?
Yeah, I was employed by Fonterra for 10 years.
Yep.
And then, sort of got into a team leader role below management. But, then I decided to go out on my own. Like, I had no real... I couldn't really have any change my destination type thing, you know what I mean? I was just getting led.
Yep.
And so I decided that I wanted to do things differently, and actually I decided to start a business, and I was going to try and work 30 hours a week. So, didn't really happen that way.
yeah, cool. Okay. So tell us a little bit about, family and stuff. You're from Hamilton?
Yep, from Hamilton. Originally, I was brought up in Whanganui, just sort of south of Taranaki.
Sorry to hear that, mate.
Yeah, went over to London for a few years and then met my wife. She was from Hamilton, so moved back here. So we've been married for about 13 years, and yeah, got three kids, 8, 7, and 5. So yeah, two girls and a boy, so life's pretty interesting and full on.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay. And just tell us a little bit about the team. So what's the setup with the business?
Yeah, so the team, so I started out on my own. And then basically over the last year, I've grown it to, there's six of us now. So there's, I've got myself, a subcontractor, three office staff, and an office lady. Oh, sorry, three tradesmen and an office lady. So yeah, and yeah, I pretty much grow with subcontractors as needed. I used to use a lot of subcontractors. I used to use, say, myself and then all subcontractors.
Yep.
But I found that there was better margins in employing the guys, and I had the work there, so I've moved away from using subcontractors now to having full staff, which is really good.
Yep, cool. Okay. So I guess the question I'd like to ask to start with is why did you come on board with the Million Dollar Tradie Program, and what sort of problems and challenges, you know, were you looking to solve?
Pretty much I saw an advert on Facebook, I think, like probably a lot of the other members have. And at that stage, I remember I was at a Cool Stores doing some temperature calibrations. And
obviously really busy.
Yeah. I was just like, man, this is pretty hard where I was at the moment. So I was by myself, had a subcontractor that I was just using a little bit, but pretty much I was sort of like, it wasn't really what I signed up for when I left. I was signing up to do a 30-hour week, and I was like, it wasn't happening. Pretty much the wheels were starting to fall off. Things were starting to get chaotic. And I was starting to get brassed off because I could just see life sort of passing me by. It was sort of like I was just this work machine. And, I was pretty much working in the technician mode. I was just like, oh, I need to work harder, get on top of this work, and then I'll be sweet, then I'll be able to cruise, you know. So it was just this mindset I had it was getting to like a unhealthy stage where I left Fonterra, which made me leave Fonterra.
Yeah,
so I was working crazy hours. I didn't know my numbers. I didn't know if I was profitable or not. I wasn't really happy about the decision going to business, pretty much, was when we first had our conversation.
Yep, okay. Cool. Can remember our first meeting?
Yeah, I can remember that too. remember it pretty clearly.
Yeah, what do you remember about that?
So when I went in there, I had this idea in my head. There was nothing on plan. There was nothing on paper. There was no vision. There was nothing. I had an idea in my head that I really loved being a Sparky, and I've always loved being a Sparky. So I had this idea in my head that I was going to do, say, 3 days on the tools, and I was going to have two or three staff, and I was just going to manage them on, you know, working around tool time. And, yeah, that was my sort of idea. And I didn't know anything about business at all. Like, pretty much I was just a tradesman that was running a business. And I was probably lucky that I was in like a good spot considering what I knew. Do you know what I mean? Like,
sure. Yeah. You've got some technical skills which are pretty valuable, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Which was a bit of a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, it was good because I was sort of in high demand for people just wanted to use me as labor and that, but it's been really good, but it didn't help me with running a business.
What sort of hours were you doing then, mate?
I'd start at 6 in the morning, so 6 till probably 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock depending on the day, and depending, because I used to do a few shift covers, so like I'd quite often do a 6 till 6 shift cover, or 6 at night till 6 in the morning shift cover. And then So once I do my shift cover, I'd go home, I'd do the, sorry, put the kids to bed or try and do dinner if dinner was running late. And then I'd pretty much work from 8.30 till, well, I just keep creeping up from 8.30 to say 9.30. That become 8.30 to 10.30. And pretty much I was running 8.30 to midnight by the end of it, you know?
So it was
just hardcore.
You look a bit like a marathon runner who was about to hit the wall, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Okay. So how was that affecting, you know, your business and you and Gemma and the family personally?
Well, it was quite interesting actually, because when I first started going on my own, I wasn't real busy, so I was sort of keeping on top of things. These extra hours that I was doing were actually, it was actually keeping me at par, you know, so I was keeping on top of things.
Yep.
And then, yeah, as it got on, more people would ask for more quotes and stuff, so things just got out of control. So pretty much my wife, I'd see her in the morning if I was lucky to start late, or I'd see her for pretty much an hour or so when I got home and, like, looked after the kids and stuff, and then she was in bed by the time I went to bed. So that was, that was pretty average. And, yeah, I was just knackered. I was just not real into it.
Yeah.
So I was pretty much running just on vapors, like, just, it was just, yeah, I look back and I don't actually know how I did it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, team, if you've got any questions as we go through today, I meant to mention at the start, please, just put them in the chat box and we'll go through them, because I think that's a really a valuable part of today. Lance just asked, is your partner working in the business?
No, so she works 2 days a week. She's a sonographer, works 2 days a week, so she, the rest of the time she's running around looking after kids, so she's not. I started having her at the start, so she, right at the start, I asked her just to do the timesheets for the subcontractors, and that was just a nightmare, so I just said to her, you're gone, man. So,
yeah, okay. So what are the key areas that you focused on to, you know, improve the business or the things that you've looked to change?
So probably one of the real big things is changing my mindset. Mindset was a huge thing for me, like being from the stage or from the sort of person where you had to do everything yourself. Like I'm a little bit of a perfectionist and I can get a little bit particular about things. So I never really just wanted to let go and get other people to do it, because I was like, I just won't be done to my standards. So I'll just do it myself. So that's been huge. And then, and I've had to change it big time, getting other people on staff, because, yeah, it's been good. Novice manager, like, I put off probably for about, after being on the program, maybe 8 months, getting an office manager, because I was always thinking to myself, well, I've got about 2 or 3 hours a week, but I don't really have eight hours a day. So I was like, I can't really see what they can do. But that has been, it's been amazing now. She's been awesome. I couldn't do without her now. She does things properly, whereas I was doing things before, doing enough to get by. She's really going to the next level and actually doing them properly, signing them off and making things sort of run smoothly in the background, which is really good.
How long did we talk about, or how long did I give you stick about getting an office manager?
Yeah, that was quite a while. It was probably like subtle hints at the start, and then there was little comments probably for a good 6 months. And then, then I sort of got a temporary office manager. I got a lady that was helping me out for probably 15 hours a week. She was recommended to me by friends, and I was like, oh, yeah, sweet, I'll try this. This will be a good stepping stone. It actually turned out that I'm still just fixing some of the stuff that she did. I'm still going through now. I've just only finally gone through probably in the last 2 months and actually got some of the systems around zero that she'd done, just fine-tuned up and fixed.
Yep. So you got to get the right help.
Oh, that's definitely huge, right?
So having the office manager and taking some of that stress, how's that changed things for you and for the business?
Oh, it's great, because then those, it means that I can, like, if I didn't have the office manager, doing wages, doing all those follow-up things is just another thing that I was doing, and it was another thing I was doing after hours, because it wasn't really productive time for me, you know. So it's been huge. She's freed up my time. She does all that sort of admin stuff that I was doing before. Instead of me doing that after hours, she's actually doing that during the hours now. And so she's making sure that all the documentation is actually getting captured and stored in the right place.
Yeah, because you have a lot of documentation with the work you do, right?
Yeah, so like a lot of my clients have got special forms that they filled out, and then like a lot of the quotes that I do, they need to have pictures because they need to know what we're doing and how we're going to do it. So she stores all that. And she manages all the vans. She manages the GPS tracking in the vans. She manages services. Before I went out and got an office manager, I didn't really probably factor all that into what they were going to do. You know, I just thought that they were just going to do admin work.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't actually know what admin work was.
Doing a lot more than you thought was possible.
Oh, definitely. Like, and probably it really came to light when I was in the interview with her. And I went to describe to her what she was going to do. And I just said to her, I had the form off the membership site. And I said, I will just run through some of the things that you'll end up be doing for me. And it's an A4 page with all the stuff on there. And I looked at it. I actually had a laugh with her. I was like, actually, there's just going to be a lot to do here. You know, we actually had a laugh together. And, it was good.
Okay, so what are some of the other key areas that you're focused on, Kerry?
So I just took my notes. What have I got there? So just probably it's changing how I look at things in the business has been really big. Like that's the biggest thing for me is that getting a software system. Like I sort of had that. When we had our very first meeting, I just implemented that. Before I just signed up for it. Yeah, but and that's, you know, like I didn't know how to use it at that stage. So having the software system now is really, really good. Like it's up and running and I use it to the full potential that I can. Like
you use it very, very extensively.
Yeah. You know, like I just try and anything that I need done in the business, I look, see if there's something in SimPro first. And if there is, then I use it, you know, because
what are some of the things that you use it for that have been really powerful for you, apart from obviously tracking jobs and scheduling and that sort of stuff?
So obviously, yeah, the job software, the quoting software is really good because it just goes, my quote turns into a job and all the attachments and photos that I take on the job follow with it. So that's really huge. So when I'm at a job, I take a photo with my Samsung, which is better than Apple. I take little notes on it and so they stay with the job so the guys can see what's happening right the way through.
Yep.
So that's really good. So the reporting on it is pretty good, like labor productivities.
Yep.
That's all I use that. So there's a weekly spreadsheet that gets emailed to me. It was actually a daily spreadsheet that gets emailed to me just to see if the guys have done all their time. So that's really good. The office lady uses the price discrepancy report. So she uploads that weekly to make sure that stock catalogs are right, and she checks to make sure that we're getting charged the right amount.
Yep.
I obviously use profit margins in that. You know, I use those, but they're not as good as zero, but it basically gives me a list of all my jobs and what profit margins each job was.
Yep.
And so it gives me a full rundown, so I use that. I use the post audits, which are really, really good. So I was having trouble just recently, like 3 weeks ago, I was having trouble with the guys not filling out a particular test sheet that I wanted done. So I just went in there, created a post audit. So now they can't close that job off till they sign to say they've done that test sheet. So I use it for a lot of that, a lot of my compliance forms.
So you've actually used the system to actually drive the processes through the business that they can't bugger it up.
Yeah, well, they can still bypass things if they want to, but they're pretty much signing to say that they've done the – and it's like a good prompt for them to say, oh, man, have I actually done that?
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So Martin just said, I agree with the Samsung comment. I'm placed as well. Okay, so what are some of the specific actions, you know, that you've taken that have really helped you be successful?
So mindset is a big thing. I couldn't be where I am without changing my mindset. And that was probably, listening to that E-Myth was pretty good. That sort of changed how I thought about things. And then as soon as I listened to that, I could actually relate back to jobs when I was actually a team leader at Fonterra and gone to myself. Actually, back then I was still in a technician mindset. So that was huge. Just trying to...
Just to explain to the other members that shift in the mindset, what specifically was that shift for you?
Oh, it was just about not that I didn't have to do every job, you know, and actually when stuff got hard, I was really lucky to get a really good background in maintenance when I was doing shift covers and stuff like that. So when stuff got hard, I just sort of kicked into fix-it mode, which was what I'd done over the last, say, 10, 15 years. And I'd go in there and just get it fixed, you know, and if anyone was with me, they'd come along and we'd just fix it together. Whereas instead of looking back, instead of what I should have been doing is actually just going right out, delegating people to different areas to get them to fix the job, and then they can come to me to ask for help. So that's how I run the business now. Like a lot of my guys, I'll send them to the task, and then if they need me, they'll give me a call. And it's been really, really sort of empowering that those guys have gone to these jobs, and I've thought to myself, wow, that's actually a really hard job they're going to. I should really be there. But they've gone to the job, and within an hour, they've rung me up and said, oh, yeah, it's all fixed, man. I found, you know, damaged relay or whatever. And so that sort of reaffirmed that I was on the right track.
Cool.
And other things we've done is, like I said, the office manager is probably definitely a really big thing, because things are getting done properly now and it's getting done really well. And job software. So my job software links with Xero, so the two things run smoothly together, so they can export and they both talk to each other. So yeah, so I saved heaps of time there. So the three biggest things that I've done.
Yeah.
So far.
So I got a question from Adrian, which is a good question. It's a difficult question. What systems have you put in place to make sure when you delegate the jobs are getting done right?
Pretty hard to put a system in place to delegate when I do these jobs, because it's like I've got the check sheets and my post audits and everything. That's really the stuff that I need, which is like, are they filling out motor test sheets? And on the motor test sheet has got all the data that I want. It's got all the tests that they need to do on it. So, and for an instrument check sheet, it's got all the instrument checks that I want to have, like make models, serial numbers, and what they've done and what they've tested. And it's got little prompts on there. So I suppose every job they go to is completely just different. Like, you know, one day they could be working on a chiller. The next day they could be working on a PLC computer, or they could be working in the next day, they could be just changing a light. Do you know what I mean? So probably the post audits is what I've done to try and maintain quality.
Yeah. It's something that we've talked about a bit, which I think is part of it, is if you want to talk the guys through what you've done with the hiring process.
Oh, yeah. So your hiring process, I pretty much used the...
Kerry, maybe before we jump in, because I think one of the keys to success that I've really been impressed with what you're doing, which I think is a good lesson, is you've got a pretty tight niche that you work in, right?
Yep. So there is other people that do what I do, and there's a few other bigger companies that do what I do. Well, I sort of, my sort of unique selling point, whatever it is pretty much around, because of my maintenance background, I've been lucky enough to come through maintenance and then do a diploma in maintenance and reliability. So the way I sort of sell myself to clients is that we're actually planning on putting a system in that is designed around being maintenance friendly as well. And so, you know, like a lot of other install companies, we'll just install a product and then leave and that's it. Whereas because I've been lucky enough to have a background in maintenance, we sort of try and install a product that's going to be good for the life of whatever we're putting in, you know, whether it's a pump or valve. So a lot of people, like we'll put in flow switches to protect pumps and stuff like that, whereas a lot of people will just put the pump in only, you know what I mean? Yeah, and so we've sort of got into the market where we're in the industrial market, which is, and there's a lot of training and a lot of compliance stuff that you've got to do, so a lot of people probably can't be bothered with that. But we've also gone a little bit different in the fact that, so because when I left Fonterra, I wasn't really, didn't feel like I was in charge of my own destiny. So what we've done is to make that better is we actually do the whole project now. We get the other subcontractors to work for us. So if there's a project there that needs a new pump in, we'll get the mechanical guys to install all the pipework, and we'll get the mechanical guys to put all the stainless conduits in. We'll get the automation guys to write the code to run the pump, and we'll get, so if there's any building work needs to be done, we'll get the builders to come and work for us.
So you manage the whole project?
Yeah, that's correct, yep. Because what I was finding was I'd turn up the site and the guy hasn't put the conduit in, yeah. So I can't wire the cable, you know, it was just frustrating me.
Yeah. How many, just a hands up if anyone else has been frustrated by their contractors or other subcontractors. Oh shit, the lights go out on the... So you basically took that out of play.
Yeah, so I mean, we still do bigger projects we do for project managers, and we still just do just the electrical and just the stainless conduits for that. We still do those sort of jobs, but probably I would say 80% of our work is basically we do the whole turnkey project.
Yeah, and it's a good question here from Jared. What kind of margins do you manage to put on your subbies?
Oh, well, I just put on 10% because some of them get... The dollars get quite big, and I try to do the best sort of value for both of us, the client and myself, to maintain that relationship. So, I mean, I sort of think 10% is fair at the moment because I don't spend a lot of time. I just send out a scope of what I want done. I probably spend no more than 4 hours on site showing them what I want done, and I've got the pictures there. I just draw on the pictures and send those to them.
Yeah.
So I sort of run at 10%, and it's worked pretty good so far.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've managed to grow turnover quite significantly by doing that, though, haven't you?
Yeah, we've done. We've doubled our turnover, and we've gone from say I think it was running 600 to 800 when I was by myself, K a year. And then we've gone to, we're just going to be hopefully pushing pretty close to 2 million this year. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, and how many full-time staff do you have?
So I've got 4 full-time staff, yep.
So 4 full-time staff.
And myself, sorry. So there's 5 of us.
Yeah. And you're going to crack $2 million.
Yep.
It's pretty good effort with 5 people. But you've managed that with the subcontractor relationships, right?
Yeah, definitely, yep.
Okay. So it's quite an interesting model in a way, isn't it? Because there's some seasonality with your work?
Yeah, definitely. So December, January is our really quiet months. So our biggest months are sort of during the dairy factory shuts, which is like June, July, August are our no holidays months. No babies, no holidays, no sickness months.
Yep. Okay. Cool. All righty. Tell us about the pricing. How did you go about changing your pricing and your thinking on that? Because that's been interesting as well.
Yeah, well, when I first started out, I was in the mindset.
What were you doing about pricing at the start?
Yeah, well, I was just trying to look after the customer and just try and give him the very best deal that he could possibly get. And as long as it made me sort of a wage that was equivalent to what I was earning on wages, then I was happy. You know, if I was making 100 grand a year, then that'd be mint. So I was talking to people and nobody really could tell me what sort of margins people were putting on equipment. Yep. So I started off with, say, 5, 10% margin on my materials. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was tracking along all right. You know, I was making okay money. I was sort of still in the positive. The bank account wasn't going down, so that was good. And then I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine who's an engineer, and he said to me about that he prices for risk. And so he'll price based on the risk of a job. And I was like, oh, that's sort of an interesting concept, because I wasn't doing that. And stuff could have gone pear-shaped for me really quickly, you know, because I was doing, you know, doing some quite high numbers jobs. So I sort of gradually started increasing it. I got up to 15%, and I was like, this is pretty good, man, 15%, mean. And then I think I come onto the program, and basically Tony challenged me like he's challenged everybody, and we talked about pricing, and I've been to a couple of the seminars, and we talked about, you know, like running around 30, 40, 50% margins, and I was like, wow. So I put my margins up to 30%, and I was still winning the jobs, and they were still asking me to do the jobs. Everyone was still really happy with the work that I was doing. Yeah, so then I've just recently actually put some of the margins up again, because I was like, well, there's a couple of the jobs there that were quite risky. So I sort of, I have put some of the margins up on those, and I have a couple of the jobs, charge up jobs. I've got a contract with some of my customers that says how much I can do. So those jobs there, I pretty much the margins drop down a lot lower, you know, but my quota jobs is where I make the money.
Yep. Cool. Okay. Now, obviously, with being in the market that you're in, there's some expertise needed. We can't just throw any old Sparky in there or engineer or whatever. You've got to be quite careful about who you choose. So we definitely had some conversations about, now, are we actually going to be able to find staff?
Yeah.
So just talk the team through what you've done with getting, I think you've got three guys on wages, and you're thinking about getting some more, because obviously it helps the margins versus subbies.
Yep.
So tell us about the process you've gone through to get staff, because obviously that's a big key to your success and to success for everyone.
Yeah, well, it was really hard actually, because like I said before, I was real lucky to get that maintenance background and that skills, and I've working for Fonterra, you get all sorts of training and that, you know. So I was just trying to find that person or somebody that was like that was pedantic and that was trained up.
It was like you.
Yeah, it was like me, you know, and I couldn't really find the right person. I actually don't think I was actually looking properly, to tell you the truth, because I just thought I couldn't find them. But in the end, I followed the 10-step hiring process, and I followed the JAB job advert, pretty much copied the job advert off the membership site, made a couple little tweaks to it just to personalize it and personalize it to the job or the person that I wanted. Sent the job advert out and got like really good responses. I got guys that were into robotics, and geez, I got a guy that, well, it was some hard case people. I got, you know, I still got a lot of people from overseas as well, but I wasn't really in the right mindset to probably employ someone overseas at that stage. I was sort of quite at the start. So I printed out the membership site reference checking and the questions and all that sort of stuff, just followed the whole process, and it was actually reasonably easy. You got three guys in, and then settled with one guy who had been in business for himself before, and he just got sick of it. And and then after the first guy, that was sort of like, that was quite hard for me. But I had employed people before at Fonterra, but not for myself personally.
Which is totally different.
It was sort of a bit nerve-wracking, you know. And after the first one, the next two were just mint. Actually, one of my subcontractors come to me and he wanted a job. I didn't employ him the first time around because I was already going through the interview process, and I already had my guys set on another guy. So when the second job advert came out, I put him through the process again, like just made him apply online, which he didn't really know why I was getting him to do that, but I said, oh no, this is the process, mate, just apply online. Still took him through the 10-step hiring process, still did the reference checks on him, and still sort of followed the process right to the end, you know, so made him go through, and, you know, ended up taking him on board. And then there's another guy that came to me, I put another job advert out, and he applied for that. He said to me that the job advert really stuck out to him. He really loved it, really liked what he saw. And that's why he applied for it. So he was really mint. He was really good. He had done. He was working for another guy at the moment, but the guy wasn't appreciating him. He was actually getting sort of some of the other fellow staff that he was working for getting put down, sort of thing, and he didn't like that. So I secured him on board, and he was great. And then the office manager, that was probably the hardest interview that I did out of all of them, because I actually didn't know what I was going to get her to do, because I'd never had really exposure to that, you know, and I was still not sure what she was going to do. I was just sort of flying by the wing of my pants that she's going to have 8 hours a day to do. But that was really good. I got her in the room, and she was really friendly and easy to talk to, and it just sort of flowed, and we went through the process, and it was mint.
Cool. Awesome. Good work, man. So what's the outcomes, you know, for yourself, for the business, from the changes you've made, and probably more importantly for you and Gemma and the family personally?
Yeah. Well, I'm still working really hard. Like, it's just, I mean, I still work really hard. But like in the last sort of probably 3 months, things have started to get better. Now that these people that I've got on board are really gearing up, the office lady, she knows what she's doing now, so things have got really better. Like, my parents came up a while ago to help look after the kids while my wife was away in England, and I was finishing at 2 o'clock during the day. You know, I had that flexibility to be home. I have had the flexibility to pick the kids up, and I've been to a couple of school events which have been during the day, so there's no way I could have done that before. And a few of the, like, I've had breakdowns that I've been called to go and fix, and I've actually sent one of the guys, and they've fixed it. So it means I haven't had to go out, which has been really good. Over the Christmas break, I left one of the guys on call, and he did the call-outs, which is great, because I was up at the beach, and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to have to come back to this, but a couple of my guys stood up and got it sorted. I'm still working on reducing my after-hours back down, and that still fluctuates up and down depending on demand, you know. So there are nights that I'll still work till 11 o'clock at night, but that's one of my key areas I'm working on, is trying to reduce that right down, and having guys helping me out is great for that. And I'm pretty much in the next, hopefully, 2 to 2 weeks, definitely in the next 2 weeks, I'll be sending out job adverts for an apprentice and an operations manager is my next key sort of guys, because I really like doing the quoting side of things. I want to try and focus on that.
Yep.
But I just can't keep up with, I've got so much demand for jobs at the moment, I can't keep up with it, so I need help there.
Yep. So you've basically reached that, as I talked about before on the ladder, you're at that sort of success stage now.
Yep.
But to go up to scale, it's about starting to build the team around you.
Yep.
And from a management perspective, a pricing and operations type perspective.
Yep. And so when I flew over to Aussie the other day, I just took the time and pumped out the job structure. I sort of thought about what I needed, and I've sort of done that now, which is really good. Like, I've got an operations manager in there, and I've actually got an instrument tech in there. So part of the work we do requires instrumentation. So I've talked to the guys, they're all going to be on board to get trained up in instruments. And so I've sort of said to them, look, I'm going to pay for this course, pay for the time off. I think it's 9 days a year time off. But I expect you guys to be sort of tied to the business, because I'm not going to spend all this money on you guys and you guys just leave, you know. So they were really good with that. They were happy, and they were pretty excited that we're going to train them up.
Cool. And what's been the impact, you know, for the business, like numbers-wise and obviously, you know, results for you guys?
Yeah, well, so numbers are great. Like, I mean, my profit margins at, say, 800 grand haven't been the same as my profit margins at, say, well, coming up to 2 million. But it's still, like, so I was running about 40%. When I was at 800 grand, and now I'm tracking around about 27%, because obviously December and January were really quiet months, so they've sort of dropped things down a little bit, but yeah, so things are going really, really good.
But the overall GP you're making is considerably higher.
Yeah, definitely. Like, when you take into account the numbers, as in the actual the money coming in compared money going out. We're up about probably 200 grand than last year. So that's good, you know what I mean? So I've actually tried to see if I can focus more on lifting the 27 back up to, say, above the 30, 35. And I have just changed my default in my job software. I've just changed my default margins up to, say, 40%.
Yeah.
And then so consciously now I don't have to worry about going, oh, is that enough? I can just do it and then tweak it back from there if I need to, you know?
And with the way you're set up, because you are doing, you know, you're selling some big gear as well, so those margins are quite low.
Yeah, so I'm selling like one instrument might be like between 5 and 7 grand, you know. So I don't put 40% on those sort of things, because I'm just like, I just try to add value to the customer as well, you know, because I sort of, if we can maintain that relationship and if everybody's winning, then everyone's happy, you know. And it's one of the customer that I've got. That was my philosophy when I first started out with him. And actually right at the start, I gave him some credits back on quota jobs where I actually just went just miles under what I quoted. I was just like, I quoted 200 hours and I did it in like 50. Yep. So so a couple of those jobs, I gave him like, say, 2 grand credit note. And I sort of put in there like that credit note due to really helpful operators and helpful people that made the job run a lot smoother. And from that job, I've picked up most of his sites in the Waikato. And now they've got new businesses coming on board, so they want me to do those businesses as well. So I'm still making good margins on them, but I've actually just tried to maintain that relationship as well, not just try and go hell for leather and get as much money as I can out of them, you know what I mean?
Cool. And I think the key thing here is, I know we talk a lot about getting margins, and if we can get up around 35, 40% or whatever, that's obviously great. But at the end of the day, the margin's not the most important thing. It's actually how much gross profit dollars you make out of it. Mm. And if you can grow your sales by maybe using some subcontractors or selling more gear, you're actually going to make more money overall with perhaps not a whole lot more effort from your perspective.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed with a lot of my so now that I've grown it from, say, 800 to, say, coming close to 2 million, I've used a lot more subbies than a lot of these guys that have come in. And if I'm only putting 10% on that sort of dragged my margins down a little bit. But
that's fine. You wouldn't have done that work otherwise at the moment. And you're thinking about bringing some more of that stuff in-house anyway as you build some more wages, guys, yeah?
Yeah, so I've been, like, contracting out some of my panel builds and stuff, but just to get control over it, I'm going to build that in-house. But I've got to grow the team to do that. So,
yeah, awesome.
I was looking at getting a property too this year, so we can. Yeah, it's just somewhere I can go and work to with the office lady, and we can catch up in the mornings, and the guys can go there too. You know, that's probably the biggest thing for me for 2018. The biggest change will be getting a premises.
Okay, cool. Guys, if you've got any questions, please shout out. So there's a couple here. Nick, what benefits have you found from using GPS tracking of vehicles?
It was actually really good. Like, part of my performance management with the guys, or my appraisals that I have, I do them so they roll around weekly. So every week I do a different guy on my team. So pretty much it's like a monthly appraisal catch-up. Yeah, so... And in that, one of my things is that they're going to arrive early, 5 minutes early to work. And I had no way of knowing before where they were on site and what they were doing. So now I just bring up the list of what they've done for the last month, and it just shows in there that, oh, yeah. And I said, have a conversation with the guy. He said to me, oh, yeah, no, I've been on time the whole time. And I was like, oh, yeah. I said, I will just have a quick look at this and go through the things. And in there, he'd been 5 minutes late, he'd been 7 minutes late, you know, he'd been 10 minutes early, then late. And I said to him, I sort of gave him a 2 out of 5 for that, because it's black and white, you know, it's not hard. And so it's been really good for that. I was getting my guys to do vehicle check sheets. I started, you know, because I'd been from Fonterra, right, they were like doing them daily. Well, I said, I would do them weekly, that's enough. It got a bit too much, so I was doing them monthly. But what I found that even doing the vehicle check sheets, these guys still were missing services. I was still getting phone calls or to say that they were out of road users or they were out of warrants, you know. So this new system that I've got is just all automated. So one part of the office lady check sheets, part of her daily task list is to go and just check to make sure that we're that the guys are on site, you know, on time, that it matches when they're supposed to be on site, matches their timesheet, that the vehicles don't need regos or warrants or services. And so that's been really good. I was a little bit worried at the start when they first, when I first was going to implement it, about what they were going to say. But I had a conversation with a guy and he was right. He said, if they've got nothing to hide, then they shouldn't be worried about it, you know.
Totally. Okay. Do you use SimTrack or what do you use?
I used the Navman one, which is, I think it's, I can't remember what it's called. The Navman one. I can find out and flick it through.
Yeah. And Glyn has a question. How did you get on with Cashflow to Grow?
Cashflow to Grow. I was real lucky, like at the start, well, I'm not lucky, I just worked hard pretty and built up my bank account, didn't spend too much, but the very first year that I went out, I banked as much as I could. So pretty much, I've always been in a positive.
You've funded through cash flow.
Yeah, I've never had to have an overdraft. So it's really, and it's as the jobs go on and I make more profit, it's just got better and better. And now I've got the business has got a really healthy bank account that we work from.
Yeah, awesome. Did you tell the guys about the fact you've been over in Aussie doing some work as well?
Guys? My guys or your guys?
Oh, these guys, yeah. So, I mean, you're in the niche, and obviously you've built up a good client base, so there's some other opportunities coming up as well, isn't there?
Yeah, so the guy I do a bit of work for, I did one job for him, and then he's got me to do a few other jobs for him on different dairy factories in different places. He specializes in RO plants for factories. And so he got me to go over to Australia and basically help scope a job out for him. And then he wants me to do the job in Australia for him as well. So yeah, it's good. But I mean, I've got to obviously get the structure around or build my team up to be able to support that, you know, because yeah, my guys are really good. Like the guys that I've got, the employees that I've got, they can self-manage. And with the office lady putting the jobs in and helping schedule them, then it's enabled me to be able to go over there for 3 days, which is good. I could have never have done it before without having an office lady in.
Awesome. So what are the lessons that that you've learned, and what would you do differently next time?
Lessons. Delegate. Pretty much delegate is a big thing for me. That was that whole mind shift thing that I was talking about. Learning how to delegate, that's huge. So moving away that from the mindset of, you know, if it's broke, you just need to put more hours into it to get it to fixed, you know, fix it. I always forgot their notes here. Get an office manager earlier is big. I never thought that I needed an office manager right at the start there, but that's really big. And also spending the money and getting the right systems, that's been really big for me. Like, I hummed and hard about even the GPS tracking. I hummed and hard about whether I needed it. And now that I've got it in there, it's really good. It sort of gets absorbed into the business costs and the benefits are there. You know, when I have my performance meetings, it's all there. You know, I'm not worrying about guys over on K's. So probably spending the money and getting the right systems in place at the start. Like I've got a friend of mine that is, I tried to get him in a job software program and he did. He went and had a look at them, and when he looked at them, he was like, oh, SimPro's too dear for me, which is all good. But now he's finding that the job software that he chose is not quite up to the specs that he needs, and it's sort of, he's sort of outgrown it, and now he's got to redo all that work that he did at the start to try and get his database in there. So he's got to redo all that now and go over it again. So probably getting the right systems in place at the start is big, you know.
Yep. And this the office help, I mean, you're obviously, you know, sort of a mid-sized business now. There's a lot of guys who've got bigger operations. I think that mindset applies in general, though, because you might have one office person or one and a half or two, But there's a massive amount of work that needs to go on in the background to make the business run smoothly.
Yep.
And if you want to move up the, you know, the tradies ladder, it's all about building systems and team, because that's how you create time, flexibility, and more profit for yourself. So whether that's someone to help you with marketing, or if you need to do some systemization, you might need to get someone in to help you do that. And I know it's a cost, but it's also an investment in your future. And you can't grow past the capacity you've got, which you've found, right? If you're the bottleneck, you just can't grow past what you can do unless you get help.
Yeah, and you just can't do everything yourself, is what I've found. You know, there's physically just not enough time and hours in the day to sort of to get it done. And if you want to spend time with your family, which is my goal right at the very start, was to do 30 hours a week and spend time with my family. You know, if you really want to do that, the only way to do it is, yeah, getting help. And like, even with my vision book, I put a whole lot of things to paper and I flipped it to my office manager, and she said it, and I said, can you just sort of format this and then come back to me? And she did. She's formatted it, put in a PowerPoint, come back to me, and away you go. You know, well, that would have been 2 hours of my time to do that. You know, probably took her in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's massive. So I think what I've been impressed about, mate, is you've started to separate the what I call the heads and the hands work.
Yeah.
So you're doing the heads work, but you're getting help with the hands work, which is really the implementation side of it, but you're still doing the thinking stuff, which is, you know, obviously what you're paid to do.
Yeah, and that's been huge, because I really love doing tool time.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and so that's been a really hard thing for me, because I really love getting out there and fixing something and seeing it fixed.
Yes.
But then I really love sitting at home too on the weekend or on a day and knowing that actually the guys are working, and I might be just having a swim in the pool or something too, you know. So that's having that flexibility is really awesome too.
So a couple of questions here. Hi, Kerry, you're a machine. Look forward to seeing you at boot camp to chew the fat about SimPro again. Okay, yep, we're looking at doing that. That's from Ricardo and somebody. Brad said, I think my office manager is lazy. How do you know what your office manager does during the day when you're not there?
So I don't really know exactly what she does, because I'm not there to see it, right? But in SimPro, in her timesheet, she enters her timesheets in SimPro. And in her timesheet, she writes down what she's done during the day. So her timesheet's logged as office work or logged as training or whatever she's, you know, the drop downs. And in there, I've got her to write in there a description of what she's done for the day. You know, so it might be working on health and safety documents, might be formatting Dropbox. So because all my files are in Dropbox, you know, she might be formatting that. Or she might be, you know, running around getting office supplies. She writes everything in there that she's done. So if I ever want to know what she's done, then it's all just written in her timesheet.
I think you've recruited well, which is one of the keys to office person. It's hard to turn a you can't polish a turd.
She's been gold, you know. And when I first interviewed her, I did my reference checks, and she'd been with the company for 10 years before. She'd only left to do another job that was basically a false promise, and so I did reference checks, and I just got these glowing reference checks, and then, yeah, I just employed her, and I was just like blown away. She's just mean. She's a machine, right?
But you've got a really good office checklist in place as well, which I think helps.
Yeah, I've got the office checklist, and just we're in good communication together, which is good. Like, she checks all my emails and basically filters anything that I don't need. She's definitely really good, but also I pay her really well too. I think I've probably paid her pretty high. Like, I started off on $25 an hour, which I think is probably not bad. And then just the other day, I just did a blanket dollar an hour pay rise across all my guys, just to try and add value, you know, just try and keep them happy. And then I've done really good bonuses for the guys too. You know, I sort of old school. So I've gone back to, like, at Christmas time, they get a Christmas ham and they get a good bonus and stuff.
Yeah.
Just to try and tie them in.
Yeah, look after them. And I think I just encourage everyone, when you're thinking about the office team, you kind of need to treat that recruitment process a bit like a military operation. You know, it's got to be, you've got to go through the process, you've got to test their skills out, and that's all in the hiring process. So just really encourage people not to shortcut that process, because you might regret that later on. So that's cool. Callum says, great bit of info on Office Manager. Have a new one starting. I often thought about how do I know what is done apart from the obvious of finding stuff not done. Okay. I think yeah. One thing that I've found that works really well with your team as well is you do have to spend some time with them. And I find because you get very busy, a lot of us don't spend enough time with our office team. So you really should have a regular catch up with them every week, at least half an hour, just to give them some face time. And I think that's that's really important because you can kind of go in different directions a little bit. So you've got to give them time as well.
Yeah, see, with this, what we've done, that in my default diary now. She's on a Wednesday at 3 o'clock, 3 to 4. We're just going to sit down and just chew the fat and go over things. And we've also, so on a Fridays now, we'll catch up and go to the pubs. Like, we haven't sort of making that better and better now. So we're just trying to get, because that's one big thing. And that's one thing about me trying to get into the office as well, getting an office is so that her and I have got a closer sort of relationship every morning. We're chatting about things and stuff, so.
Yeah, and look, Kerry's business hasn't got a premises yet, so there's more great stuff to come.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what are your suggestions or prescriptions, for people who are wanting to grow and improve and do some of the things that you've done?
So definitely get the right job software for what you need to do, and probably try and use technology as much as you can. I know like a lot of people try and shy away from technology, but having the job software talking to Xero is, that just saves time, so any of that sort of stuff that you can do in your business, I think it's pretty good. Yep. Like using Dropbox for stuff and not having stuff so everybody can access it has been really good, like having those systems in place.
Yep.
Hiring the right person is definitely like right up there. Like, my pretty much, from what I know now, my office manager, like I class her as what her role is, an office manager, not actually a receptionist or an admin person. It's really because she's up there helping me run the business. So having that right person in that role is critical for growth in my mind, just systemizing, changing that mindset. Yeah, not being afraid to spend money on the business to grow the business. That's a big thing,
Spend to grow, yeah. Because it does, you've got two resources you can use. You've got time and money. Mm. And most of us are already time poor, so if we want to grow and improve, we can't spend any more time. We actually have to invest some money to get help or technology. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, investing in the guys too, making sure that you actually don't try and sort of cheat them as just a cheap labor resource, because now my guys, this is what I'm trying to put my guys through training, is now, see, those guys are really valuable to me. Even every day that goes by, they're more valuable. So trying to keep them on board is huge.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, cool. Any questions, team? For Kerry. And while there's a couple of guys have headed off, Joanna and Tupaya, no problem. So exciting times ahead, mate. So what's next for you?
The next is, build this, so my management team around me, so the office manager, and get that going really, really well, because that's going to free up the backlog of work and my time. And getting a premises, I'm real excited about getting a premises. I've sort of been looking for about maybe 3 months now. I spoke to a few real estate agents and they said, January, February should be starting to come on. So I'm pretty excited about that. Like, I've had a talk with, about Brad, about his getting his premises, and he's loving it. So, yeah, I can't wait to sort of, follow that.
Are you going to buy or rent?
I'm going to try to buy. The reason for that is I know, renting is easier and cheaper, but I just hate sort of spending money where I'm not going to get it back. So I sort of want to try and buy something, so later on, once I kick back a little bit, I still hopefully have an asset like that.
Yep.
That Rich Dad Poor Dad CD, or that thing that you've got is great for like changing your mindset around that.
Awesome. So question from Adrian, how do you identify training for your guys? What's the training they need?
The training is, well, the business needs them to do instrument training, because I picked up that when they were doing a couple of jobs, they didn't really have the skills that they needed to do that job to the standard that I wanted it done at. So that was the business pick that up. But also in my performance sort of discussions with the guys that I have monthly, because, you know, they roll around, a couple of them have said to me that they want to do instrument training.
Yeah.
So there's just between those two. Like the guys are really trained up, so they don't need heaps of training, but this is one area they wanted to train, so it was perfect for the business.
So those regular catch-ups you have with the guys are pretty valuable, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, they're real good, because they work out monthly, and yep. On our display board there's a spreadsheet of every month, every guy, and every month, and yep. What happens is their score is up on the board.
Right.
So, you know, those catch-ups dictate those scores, and it also gives them a chance, like you've said before, Tony, just to see how they're going with the business. Like, I was really stoked the other day when one of the guys, and tradesmen historically don't give 10 out of 10s. It's just not what we normally do, you know what I mean? But the guy said to the guys, how do you like the job? Are you sort of, how are you going? Are you enjoying it, or is anything going wrong or anything? And he's like, oh, I said out of a 1 to 10, out of a 1 to a 10, like, what, 10 being awesome, 1 being, like, shite, how do you rate your job with us, you know? And he goes, oh, about 8 to 9. So I was pretty stoked with that. That was sort of a bit of affirming that I think we've got the right guys and we're sort of doing the right things.
Yeah. So question here from Lance, will you buy commercial property through the business or a separate entity like a trust? I can probably answer that. You want to do it with a separate entity.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's risk. Spread your risk. Ricardo and Tommy, how have you bonded your guys with the instrument training to make sure they stay on?
So basically, I haven't written that up into an agreement or contract yet, but basically what we're going to do is that if they leave within, I've talked about it, leave within a year, then they pay the cost of the course. So I'll still have to wear the cost of them doing the 9 days training, but they'll pay the cost of the course, which is about $2,000. So,
cool. Jared, are the monthly catch-ups separate from your annual or six-monthly performance reviews, and do you have a structure for them?
I don't do a six-monthly performance review. The guys have only been on staff probably for just over 6 months, maybe 8 months, you know. I just do the monthly catch-ups as basically their performance reviews and their how we're going with the business. They can see, so part of their log on for their Simpro, they can sort of see all the jobs that we're doing, and the office lady sends out jobs, sort of total jobs that we're doing, so they know what's coming up. They don't know any dollar values of the business, but they know that we're doing some big projects, so they're probably, yeah.
Yep, cool, okay. Awesome, so any other questions? And we'll probably wrap things up if we don't have any other questions. Awesome, so I guess a few things that pop out from today's discussion, and obviously working with Kerry over the last 12, 18 months, is how powerful it is to have a niche where you have some speciality, and that sort of takes away the need to be excessively price focused. So I think that's really powerful. I think what you've talked about changing your mindset has been really impressive to me, to go from being the technician to thinking like a business owner. And actually working on building the business, spending your time on that. I think, like everyone, and I know, I'm sure you don't mind me sharing this, you've had fear and uncertainty about taking these steps.
Yeah, definitely.
It's massive, but you've done it anyway.
Yeah. I've just sort of taken the leap of faith, you know, like I've sort of trusted in the process, and and actually every time that I've done something, like getting that first guy on board, I'm like, well, I just got to do it. And you do it and you go, sheesh, that wasn't that hard. It was mint, and now it's mint. And the office manager was the hardest, but that has been
the best.
Yeah, been the best, mate.
and I think the cool thing also that I've noticed is you really followed system and process. which is obviously mean you get good results rather than just winging things, which is cool. I still think you can charge a little bit more. You're a little bit nice sometimes. You probably undervalue yourself a little bit, mate, but that's fine. You can work on that. And the way that you've managed to grow the sales with a very small team and use subcontractors effectively, I think, is really cool. And obviously, there's lots more room to grow once you get the management team in place. I think that there's not a lot of ceiling for your business. It's really just based on what you want to do with it. The market's massive. So great stuff. We do have one other question. It's from Jamin. Roughly how much is Simpro? We have a team of 5 staff.
Depends on what your add-ons and everything, but I pay, I think it's probably $350 a month, and that includes, so I've got 4 licenses, I think it is, and I've got, they've all got e-forms as attached as part of that, and so it's about $350. But see, the one thing, I had one invoice when I was using Excel spreadsheets. I had one invoice that I got asked from a client to charge because I hadn't charged it yet because it had just got lost in my system. And that was $3,000, you know. So that was, as soon as that happened to me, that was my turning point. I was like, rightio, that's it. I just about lost $3,000 worth of gear. How much am I losing on materials? So the cost, that's that was thing I was saying before about the costs become not the most important thing because I was actually losing money that I probably didn't know about.
Yeah, massive. And there is a setup cost with Simpro as well. So that's several thousand.
Yep.
Yeah, but they're a good bunch. It's a good system. So awesome, team. Hey, Kerry, look, appreciate your time, mate, and good to hear the story, and thank you for sharing it with everyone. You've done a great job, man. Really, really stoked for you guys, how it's gone. So appreciate that. Have a great afternoon, bud, and